Morning, Doug. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good morning.
Hey, Cal.
Oh, Cal. Good morning, Cal. Victor.
Okay, let's just see if everybody online, if you hear people who are online, if you're picking up the stream, let me know and then we'll start the class. Let's just write audio okay at the bottom of your screen and then we'll start. Okay, Tina, thanks. All right, so we're up to Okay. And just put your the mute buttons on. Okay, so let's read it. So he says it as follows, and again, he's still in the matter of money. So King Solomon says, there is an evil. Now, the next word can be interpreted a number of different ways. The Hebrew word is, the root is chol. So chol can mean either sickness or something which occurs. Something as chol means that it occurs, it happens, it occurs. It could also have the sense, like Ibn Ezra says, of from the word of a nachalah, which is an inheritance. And you'll see why, because the next verse talks about a father leaving something to his son. All right, but anyway, let's just interpret it as the simplest, a lot of the English will interpret it as sickness. So he says, there is a evil which is very sick, a sickly evil, that I have seen under the sun. Now, what is that? He says that there is great wealth, or wealth, I should just say, that is guarded by its owners, or to its owners, but for an eventual evil. Verse 13, he goes on and explains. What is that evil? The osher is lost, meaning all the wealth that was guarded or kept for or by the wealthy person is lost in an evil occurrence, in an evil matter. Either suddenly robbers take it, or the person is accused of things and he loses his money. So different explanations to what the actual evil is, but this is the evil which he says, this is a sickly evil that he's seen under the sun, and that is that the wealth that is guarded by the owners only for a certain evil to occur, which is an interesting phrase. But why does he have to say that? Because he just said that I've seen a certain sickly evil under the sun, and that is that there are people that have a lot of wealth. Then he can go into verse 13 and say, and then the wealth is then lost. So now you know what the evil is. But you see at the end of 12, he says that the wealth is guarded by the owners for an eventual evil to happen. So it's sort of like bringing up evil twice. All right, just take a note of that. Nonetheless, he says, and then the wealth is lost suddenly in an evil type of matter. And then he has a son, and he has nothing in his hand. So since he lost his money, there's nothing to give to the son. So now the son has nothing in his hand. Verse 14. It's all the same matters. We'll continue reading the verses. As the person left the stomach of his mother naked, he'll return to go back there as he came. So clearly he's talking about just like the person had no wealth when he left his mother's stomach when he was born. So when he returns, he's not going to have anything. And there's nothing that he carries for all of his work that he can take to his hands. That he could take in his hands. And the last verse we'll take up today is going to be the next verse, which is 15. Then King Solomon says, and also this, I've seen a sickly evil. Just as a person has come into the world, so also he will go. And what benefit is there in all of his labor that he's labored just for the wind? When he says he labored for the wind, it means like wind is nothing. So he labored and he lost all the money, and the son, he has nothing in his hands. So he goes back empty-handed. Okay, everybody have the facts?
Yep.
Okay. Very clear facts. which always makes it so much more difficult to figure out, well, what if it's so obvious, so clear, what is he trying to teach us? All right, now, go, if you have the verses, go over them again and look clearly. You know, try to, again, the Hebrew, of course, is going to give you the real message. And the English, unfortunately, many times, it's pretty much impossible to do justice to the Hebrew. So take a few moments and just go over the actual translation. And I'll read it one more time, too. There is an evil, going back to the beginning of 12. There is an evil, the sickly evil that I've seen under the sun. Wealth that is guarded by its owners for his evil. And the wealth is lost. That wealth is lost in an evil occurrence. And he gives birth to a son, and he has nothing in his hand. As he leaves the stomach of his mother naked, he'll return there. As he came, and there's nothing that he carries for all of his toil that he can take in his hands. And this too is a sickly evil. Just as the person has come, so he will go. And therefore, what benefit is there to him that he toils just for the wind? He toils just for the wind. He toils and he has nothing. Yes, Doug.
Good. So, it seems like the theme here is that for those people that toil for riches, first of all, you spend a bunch of energy guarding it, and yet it can be lost through, you know, circumstances, a thief or whatever. And at the end of the day, really, you came into the world naked, you're going to leave naked, and so the person has this fantasy that somehow the wealth is going to do something for them, but if we just take the part that, okay, we all come in with nothing and we all leave with nothing, then the only real purpose of any wealth that you would build up is the amount you would practically use during your lifetime, but that there's no... Other than just the practical part of feeding you and putting a roof over your head and so forth, there is no end value, if you will, to accumulating lots of wealth. It's a waste of time, and yet the fantasy that many people spend their lives on.
Right. So what is his, what are the key words here, and what are the message? Because evidently, he speaks quite a bit, and again, you know, we talked about how to pick up on what the underlying message is, and one of them is repetition. Do you see any repetition
here? Yeah, I mean, he uses the term either grievous evil, it's the way it translated in mine. I think he used the term sickly evil. He uses that at the beginning and the end. So in verse 12 and verse 15. And he uses the term evil again in 13. And uses the term nothing in verses 13 and 14.
Right.
It's interesting that instead of just talking about it being vanity, like, that is just a waste, he's stronger than that.
Yes.
In the opening of verse 12, there is a sickly truly evil, that's a little stronger than just you're wasting your time.
Right, that's something new. We never saw that before in the book, right? We never saw the word sickly before. I mean, I don't recall seeing
right.
I don't recall seeing that word. We're like halfway through the book already. And
yeah, I mean, right.
So that's important to note. And he does use it twice. But keep in mind also, when he uses it the second time in verse 15, he's not referring to the same evil. He says, and also, meaning another evil I've seen, another sickly evil. That's important. That first word in 15, and also this I've seen as a sickly evil. But if you take, I mean, what bothers me is that it sounds like 15 is a repetition of 14. That's what I was getting at when I said repetition. It's good that you brought up the individual words that are repetitive. But doesn't he say in 14, just like a person left the womb of his mother naked, right? He left the stomach of his mother naked. He's going to return there as he came, right? And he's got nothing. Nothing that he can carry for all of his toil that he can take with his hands. Now what is he saying in 15? He says, and also this, as if he's about to say something new. And also this is a sickly evil. As a person comes, so also he goes. Didn't he just say that? And therefore, what is the benefit for all of his toil? Didn't he just say that too? He says in 14 that he doesn't carry anything for all of his toil. Now he says, what benefit is there in all his toil? That he just labored for the wind. Meaning to say, he labored and there's nothing. You see what I'm saying?
Rabbi, quick question on the facts of 15. So, I'm looking at Judaica Press here, and it says, this too is a grievous evil, that just as it came, so shall it go. I would have assumed from reading this that it was talking about the wealth, not the person. Is the Hebrew referring more to the person?
It seems to be referring to the person, because just as it comes, he goes. And what benefit is there to him? So it can't be a benefit to the wealth. The wealth has no benefit. So let's just talk it out. He says, just as a person comes, so also he will go. This is in 15 for everybody else. Just as he comes, also he will go. Now, if you say it's money, so what do you mean? Just as it came, also it will go.
Well, I was wondering, I mean, Rashi seems to think it's the money, because he's reading it as just as it came, so shall it go, and what advantage then does he have? So sort of like, okay, the money comes, the money goes, so what advantage does the guy have in all the toil that he did for the wind?
Just as the, yes, right, I see Rashi, you're correct. Rashi is referring to that as being the money. Just as that money came, it goes. Okay, so
right.
What would the message be then, according to Rashi? Let's see how the verse works. Just as, so first, in 14, it's talking about as the person came naked, so he goes back. Now, why is the money coming and going more of an evil? Let's see how he concludes. He says, in what benefit is that to him, that he worked for nothingness? Okay, you can make sense of the pasuk that way. You can make sense of the verse that way.
Okay, but it sounds like you have an alternative that I'm curious about.
Yes, I do. Again, I'm understanding this, and I'll show you why. I'm understanding this to be the person. And then if that's true, so isn't that a repetition of 14? He already talked about the person as he came from the stomach of his mother, naked. He'll also go back. And there's nothing that he carries in his hand. Right, so let's talk about the person. Now, why? So the question would be on me. So why would he have to repeat this over again in 15? And he says, and this too I've seen as a sickly evil. Just as the person has come, also he goes. Didn't we just say that? And therefore, what benefit is that to him is that he toils for the wind? they'll have to explain that. What's the repetition? Rashi's okay. Rashi's safe. It's not repetition.
Rabbi?
Yes.
I wonder if the repetition has to do with he begets a son and he has nothing in his hand. I wonder, does that mean that then the son models what his father did? And then it's a generational thing, and then there's nothing?
Well, it seemed to me the plain reading is that the father has nothing to give to the son. And Ibn Ezra says that if he would have just lost the money without having a son, so then the evil would have only been half as bad. So he's trying to show an illustration of where losing the money is a detriment to the father, and then also by having a son with nothing to give to him, that's another evil.
What made me think of the generational thing, though, is right after he talks about begetting a son, it says, as he emerged from his mother's womb, I thought, is that the son or is that the father?
That seems like the son now, because he just talked about birth. So the simple flow would be, he talked about the whole vein, he gives birth to a son. I mean, collectively, he and his spouse. And then he continues on that. And as he left the stomach of his mother naked, he's going to go back naked. There's nothing that he did. He's not given anything. That make it talk. You can refer to the father as well. It doesn't bother me as much because it doesn't. It's a person in general, but he's trying to express something over here. And Doug was illustrating it before that, in general, what's the person? He's not taking anything with him. And you see how he ends the verse that way. And when there's nothing that he carries for all of his toil that he takes in his hands.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Going down to your path, is it possible then that there's a key in the last phrase of each verse? Because 14 says, as he left his mother naked, shall he go, and he carries nothing with his toil. So all his toil, he carries nothing back into the grave with him.
Yes.
But verse 15 says, and what advantage does he have that he toils for the wind? So it's not just that he carries nothing, but that maybe even in this world, nothing was left that was advantageous for all the work that he did. In other words, is it trying to make a distinction there between, one result and the other?
Right. Well, it's not talking about in these over, because it says in 15, what benefit is that to him? Not what he leaves over. Tina, you said you're confused with the meaning of the verse. Which verse are you talking about, Tina?
Well,
go ahead, Doug.
I'm thinking, okay, suppose we argued that, you can't take anything with you, everybody goes to the grave and you're dead. But I built up my wealth and I was able to give it to my sons and to charities and foundations and monuments and all kinds of things. So verse 14 would still hold that I can't carry it with me into the grave, but that verse 15, I could have argued, but there is an advantage to me because I have built up these things and therefore I'll be remembered or something like that. And maybe the verse is addressing both. Or the two verses together are addressing both possible cases that the rich person might be thinking of. A, it's not going to do you any good because you can't take it with you, and B, anything you did, even here on earth with all that wealth, is not going to give you any advantage.
Right.
I'm
Well, the commentaries do go into that point. Like Sforno, when he says he carries nothing with him, he acquires nothing in his wealth, any type of completion that's eternal, meaning it's something to the soul. But then he says it more clearly, yeah, there's nothing in his eternal world, which is clearly talking about the soul. And there's nothing he can carry with him. He has acquired nothing that can help him after he dies. We have to think back to the way we understood the reading of the verses when we first started learning Kohelis. And we had one rule which we repeated, and that is that when he talks about a certain thing which is futile, so what he does is you think that he's calling something futile as if he's talking about a certain topic, and this is like a futility. But what we said is that he's verbalizing the opinions of people, and that's what the futility is. And sometimes things are worse than others, which would explain why here he talks about it as a sick evil, a sickness. Meaning to say, when he says in verse 12, there's an evil I see under the sun, and that there's wealth that's guarded by its owners, but then it's suddenly lost. So on the surface, if you just read it literally, so King Solomon is lamenting the loss of money that a person puts away. But the other way to read it, and that is that he's lamenting the people who have this opinion. I mean, he's telling you what's the evil. It's the opinion that people have. So is he saying that the loss of the money is an evil? That the guy puts away all the money, and then that really means that it's a good, but then if he loses it, that's an evil? Right? I mean, is he expressing his sentiment about money, or is he vocalizing the thoughts of people, the actions of people, and then that's what he's really underlying as being a futility? Do you see the difference? Okay. Maybe the second verse will be more helpful. The rich man loses in 5:13. All of a sudden, the rich man, he loses his money in a sudden calamity, and he has a son, and he has nothing to give him. So on the surface, you could say, well, it's a loss not to be able to give your son money because you lost all your money, right? That's what you could look at that as a negative. Or you could say that very sentiment of people, that they're making the money just to leave it for the children, that's the thing which is a futility. It's the view of how people operate. He's trying to illustrate the phenomena, how people work. And he says this entire phenomena is sick. And you can say simply, why should you be wasting your life and putting away all your money to leave if you can? Where's your benefit to your own soul? You're working hard to leave money for your child? Let him learn the value of working. So if you read it literally, it sounds like he says it's a bad thing if you don't have money to give to your son. But perhaps the more subtle way of reading it is that when he says something is futile, it means it's very philosophy, which is the opposite opinion. It's not a good to put away the money for your son. It's really a negative thing because you're wasting your life doing it. Was that more clear?
Yes.
So then we... Does everybody else see that? Is that anybody confused about it? I know it's a little subtle. And then if that's true, and he's still illustrating the evil that people have in terms of how they operate, so he goes on in 14, and he says, what's the continual evil? The continual evil philosophy is not, it's not bad that you leave your mother's stomach naked and you go back naked. That's not the evil. What's the evil? You tell me now.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Rabbi, is the evil that the person is working so hard, not for himself, or others have done some funds that may not appreciate it, and what they all his work for, because they, by themselves, as individuals, should be working for themselves. Why should he be killing himself?
Right.
Is that what he's trying to convey?
Well, that's what, you know, I was explaining in 13, but what I'm asking now in 14, if we carry through the subtle lesson, that what King Solomon is doing, he's illustrating not his own opinion, but he's vocalizing the opinions of people and showing ultimately that this is a wrong view. So how do we understand verse 14 now? If we just understand it literally in the initial way we were talking about it, so it sounds like King Solomon is lamenting, and he's saying just like a person leaves naked, he goes back naked. Meaning it's like, you know, it's a shame. Like it's a shame almost that he can't take anything with him. But that's only the plain reading. But we're saying now he's really vocalizing the foolish thoughts of people. So how do we explain 14 now?
Well, that's where I'm getting confused, because most people who have children, they want their children to have an easier life than they had. And so they do this. They do exactly what you're saying.
Well, that's 13.
They leave the money, they work hard, and they go back to Olam Haba, but the children have the money if they know how to handle it. And if they don't know how to handle it, they lose the money too.
Well, that's leaving
proof.
Leaving money to the children is 13. We're now in 14. 14 doesn't mention the child anymore. Now it's just saying in general, just as one leaves the mother's stomach naked, he goes back naked as he came. So this would apply to anybody.
Right.
So let me explain. Maybe the answer will make it clear. It'll make the question clear.
See,
what he's saying is that this is the question. He's carrying through with the... If somebody could turn on the mute buttons, I'm getting a lot of feedback. Okay, so he's carrying through with the false idea. The number one, you see in 12, that what is the sick evil that exists is that wealth is guarded to its owners. Either it's an occurrence or the person actually, the wealthy man, the rich man actually guards it himself, but only it ends up for an evil. He's guarding it for an ultimate evil. So there's an inherent, we asked before, why does he have to say evil there? He says it again in 13 that he loses the money. But he says that, what it means guarding it to evil, I mean there's an ultimate, there's an inherent problem in hoarding the money. And he explains how it eventually could be lost. So if you just read the verses simply, you think that it means that the loss of the money is the evil. No. Is that the person carries his philosophy, but the person does it practically. Meaning, when he talks about it in 12, he says there is an evil that is sick, and I've seen it under the sun. Note that he does not say under the sun in verse 15 when he talks about the second evil. He says in the first evil. Why? Because the first evil is talking about the practical. What does a person practically do? The events that take place on earth. But again, the assessment of evil is only because you're looking at it just in, you're just assessing it based on an earthly occurrences. If that's all you do, so then you're right. If you just assess the value of a person based on what happens under the sun, meaning your days, your earthly days, if that's the entire life of a person from his birth till his death, so then the person will have an assessment of both evil, because while he's on earth, while he's under the sun, he has the money and he loses the money. But then there's another, and then the person follows through in 14 and he says that he comes naked from his mother, he goes back. It's like he's like lamenting it. And he's got nothing in his hands. Nothing that he carries with all of his work. Meaning to say that the foolish assessment of value is that the person should have accumulated wealth. And even though he's dying, he's not taking anything with him, the people will still say that the real loss is that there's nothing that he carries for all of his labor, that he takes with his hands. Meaning that is another foolish statement. It's not King Solomon's view. He can't have a view like that. Because there is no value to having money in the bank when you die. But he's expressing the two or three foolish views that people have. One is that the person guards his money, it's just to be lost. Second thing is, he feels he's got nothing to leave to his son. Another foolish view. Third thing is that he has a sentiment that he has nothing, there's nothing that he's accomplished as he leaves. But that's a foolish thing, because it doesn't matter what you've done in terms of building up buildings and putting money away when you die. There's no benefit to you anymore at that point. So he's vocalizing the wrong thoughts of people. And that's what I meant when I said earlier that what was the manner in which we understood King Solomon when he says that there's a certain futility in the world. And he talks about how this happens and that happens. Now, is he talking about that he feels that the events themselves are evil or futile? No, it's the value. He's vocalizing the views of people. But people feel, I've got nothing to leave over to my son. No, he's saying he's attacking that very thing. That's the futility. And then you see more clearly in 14, where he says, what's the futility? What's the evil? And what is the sickly? The sickness is that, because people are, it penetrates the person so much. The sickness is when a person is completely functioning in a distorted way, where the body is not on the right path. The organs aren't functioning properly. So that's what he says over here, sickness, meaning the mind is not functioning properly. It's got a completely distorted value system. And he's valuing earth when really it's temporary. And he looks at it like it's a permanent thing. So permanent, he looks at it, that he says, well, even a person admits death and he leaves, but he laments the fact that when he leaves and he's, for all the toil, there's nothing to show for it. But that's a foolish thing, he says. Now, when he says 15, I asked why it's like a repetition of 14, because it talks about that you came naked, you go back naked. 15 sounds like the same thing. Not according to Rashi, but according to the way I want to understand it, is that he's referring to the person again. That now, he says, this also I've seen as a sickly evil. But he doesn't say under the sun. Why doesn't he say it's under the sun? And he says, what is that evil? As the person came, so also he goes. And what is there? Where all the labor that he worked just for wind. Meaning there's nothing there. It's like it's evaporated. Everything he's done, there's nothing there. Now, I'll get to the questions on screen in just a minute. Let's just flesh out the issue here. But why does he not say under the sun in 15? Again, he says, I've also seen a sickly evil. And he does not say under the sun in this case. And he says, as a person came, or as the literal reading is, as one came, or as the thing came, it also goes. And that's what Rashi was able to say. It's talking about the money. The money comes, it goes. Or it means as a person comes, it goes. But according to that reading, it sounds like a repetition of 14. And then King Solomon concludes that verse and says, what benefit is there to him that he toiled for nothingness? So that's why I want to say that it's talking about the person, because he's got nothing in his hand. And if you want to say the money, the truth is, it's really the same sense, even if you go according to Rashi, meaning he has no wealth. There's no wealth to him, or you could talk about as the money came, it went, or as he came and he went without the money. Either way, it's talking about the person. In the conclusion of the verse, really, the truth is, it doesn't matter how you go, whether it's Rashi or whether you go the other way, the way I'm going, because what you're trying to say at the end is that the person is going empty-handed, and he's got nothing in his hands. But why does he not say under the sun in this case?
Rabbi?
Yes.
So, leading up to your question, which I have a suggested answer for, am I right then in understanding that in your interpretation, 12 is the event, 13 is how people look at it, 14 is the event, 15 is how people look at it. Is that kind of the breakdown?
12 is the event, Well, 13 is also the event. It's the event of not having money to give to the son. So 12 is the loss of the money suddenly that the rich man is guarding his whole life. Right, so he's got a distorted value on the money. And then look what happens. It can be evaporated very quickly. So if that's the case, there can't be a good in hoarding money. Because it's trying to show you how quickly it could be lost. But this is the evil that people do. They have this type of a value system. And what's 14? Right, so 14 is a sentiment that the people have, a value, that it's continuing on, just like one's regretful that he has nothing to give to his son. Then there's also the sentiment that they go back with nothing in their hands, as if they went to the grave with a big bank account that has a value to them. So those are the values of the person. He starts off by telling you this is what a person goes through, and this is the opinions of people. But I think what he does in 15 is that he's underlining that last statement, because that's really ridiculous. That's why he says this is also an evil, a sick evil. But he doesn't say it's a sick evil under the sun, because under the sun has to do with events, right? Occurrences. So under the sun, meaning it's something that's taking place in actuality, some physical phenomena, occurrences. So that you could talk about being under the sun. It has a locale. But a value, right? So that would be what? That would be addressing the acts of hoarding the money, and the acts of then losing the money, and then being bereft of any pennies to give to your son. That's all under the sun. And then they also under the sun is the continuation, is that there's the situation of the person of being empty-handed as he leaves the world. So he critiques the events, but then he critiques the opinion, the underlying opinion. That's why he says also this sickness I have seen. It's a second sickness. What's the second sickness? It's the underlying value system. That's why he doesn't say under the sun, because a value is not under the sun. That's in a person's soul. So you can't talk about the value as being under the sun. That's why I believe he leaves out the words there, because he's trying to underline and say this is a sickness. There are two things going on. There's the actual activities, and then there's the sickness. And you remember we talked about at the beginning that Rabbi Chaid explained that there's a Hevel Havolam, the futility of futilities, is how the whole book opened. And Rabbi Chaid said, you know, that beautiful idea that what's the futility of the futility? One futility is to look at the physical as the value. The other futility, I mean, one futility is the physical, that system where a person looks at the physical as really, that's the ends, and he doesn't look at it as really just means to a life of intelligence and wisdom and love of God. The other futility, Rabbi Chaid said, is the fantasy that a person attaches to it. See, here it's similar. He's talking about the events. That's one sickness that the person goes through. This, he's so attached to money, and it's not going to do anything for him when he leaves. That's in terms of the actions themselves. But then and that's why he says under the sun. But then the next sickness he talks about in 15 is this also I've seen a sick evil. But it's not under the sun, because now he's talking about the value. And the person feels bad. Now, what's the value that the people have that's sick? It's that they feel bad that they come and they go and they've worked and there's nothing to show for it. He said that itself, that value system, and it's underlying what he said in 14. I can't explain away why it doesn't do it. Actually, maybe the verse itself in 14 is just talking about the sentiments of the people. In 15 is his own critique. And that make it, sometimes you repeat something for the emphasis. But when you have something which is the thought of the person, sometimes you gloss over that. People tend just to look at actions and events, and that's what he's talking about. But he wants to underscore the fact over here that there's a second sickness. And that is the opinion of the people that they lament being empty-handed when they leave the world. And he's trying to tell you, don't lament that. Okay. Let me see if that's clear.
I think I understand.
Okay. Right, I think it's interesting, too, that he leaves out the words under the sun. That's very indicative. I mean, it seems like a very subtle but purposeful omission. Because he used it just a few verses earlier. So he wakes the person up, oh, this one's not under the sun. Oh, it's not under the sun, that means it has to be in the mind. It has to be in the conscious. So he talks again in 12, just to recap, so he talks about the phenomena of people hoarding the money. This is something which offers a person, I mean, why does a person do it? It's a false sense of security. And you know, we say in the prayers in the morning, right before Elenu, that God does not forsake those who rely on Him. They really look at Him as a trust. That's the real trust in God. No matter what happens, they don't lose the conviction that God can help them. God created the universe. He can't give a person a few more dollars. If a person doesn't have that trust, then he's subject that God might forsake him. But if a person does... have that type of a lack of, if a person lacks that trust, you know, God forsake him. But if he doesn't, if he has that conviction and he has that trust and he knows clearly that God can do all, he has that complete reliance, and whatever phenomena comes up, he knows he does his best. He labors, he's trying to live a certain type of life, and you have guarantees throughout the Torah that a person will have that, God will take care of the person. So as long as he doesn't do that, as long as he has that conviction, God's not going to forsake him. And maybe for two reasons God doesn't forsake him. He doesn't forsake him for his own good, so he has his needs. And he also doesn't forsake him because then that person who has a trust in God will tell others. Just like the people who follow God. So we say that they'll be vigorous and fresh, even in old age, to tell how God is righteous and there's no flaw in him. So God will keep certain people alive very long, and they'll be strong and fresh and vigorous. And the purpose will be, why? And this is the end of the song of the Sabbath day. Mizmor Shir LeYom HaShabbos. And this is Lahagid Ki Yashar Hashem, to tell people that God is straight, He's upright, He's 100% truthful. He is my rock, and there's no flaw in Him. So, but that's explaining why God will sustain certain people to live long, old ages. And they'll be strong in their old days. They'll be fresh. They'll be vigorous. So you see also in the end of the Uval Tzion, right before you say Aleinu in the morning, God does not forsake those who trust in Him. So that's the right attitude. Here you got a person that is trusting in his money. And I don't like when people say that they make money their idolatry. I like to be very accurate. So idolatry is reserved for a certain type of a thing. Deifying, personifying certain things, feeling there's a will in an inanimate object. That's idolatry. Or Chait said, he's saying, attributing causes when there is no cause. For example, a person assumes that I do this in front of this statue, it's going to cause certain fortune for me, certain wealth or happiness for me, certain success. But there is no cause between a rock. I don't care if you carved it into anything, a totem pole, whatever it is. So that's a good way to explain it, that you're attributing causes where there are no causes. That's idolatry. But to say that a person makes money idolatry is not a good thing, because it gets you into not clear thinking. You have to be accurate in your speech. You have to be accurate in your thought. So here the person's making it into a value. And this is going to give him security. He feels he's got that, but he doesn't realize that God is behind the scenes, and he's not attached to the true reality. Rabbi Chait said once regarding a class he gave on, it was in Purim, I believe, and giving gifts to the poor, and just did the concept of being attached to the sender and not to the sent item. What does it mean, being attached to the sender? It means God's the one who sends success to man. So that's what you should be attached to, is to God. Not being attached to the money, the object of what He sent. Because that's something which, like you see right here, a person can hoard away a lot of money and then all of a sudden it's gone. You don't have control over circumstances. There's only so much you can do. There are too many variables in your life. All right, so let's just look at 14 and 16 one more time because I am a little bit bothered by the repetition. And I just want to be clear on what's the need to have 15. So again, we're saying that 12, 13, and 14 are really the opinions of people. And that's what King Solomon is saying. You see, there is, if we read the beginning of 12, there is a sickly evil which I have seen under the sun. Now he narrates the events of people and the values. The rich people that put away their money, that it's only really for an ultimate evil that's going to happen. And what is that? The event that it suddenly is lost to him. And he also has nothing to give to his son. And then also the person has another bad thing happens to people, is that they lament the fact that a person leaves the mother's womb naked and goes back naked, meaning all the toil was for nothing. He doesn't carry anything, all the work, everything he did. He just, there's no benefit. He was trying to get a benefit where he couldn't. He was trying to escape death. And a person doesn't face that. So they feel the permanence that this is going to go on forever. Okay, so that's the way people operate. But then King Solomon comes back in and now attacks that last sentiment. So again, I'm suggesting that perhaps he's repeating it because this is something which can go a little bit under the radar. People look at events. That's what they gravitate to. They don't stop. Like, how many people stop and really reflect on themselves and think about themselves? Do they affect the person this way? Or what was their motive behind this and that? People don't go into their minds and reflect. People are operating and I'm doing this, I'm going there, I'm going here. And it's the actions, the physical activity that they're engaged in, and that's all the mind is really absorbed in. So he has to stop and pull out what's going on behind the scenes. That's perhaps why he says this is not under the sun. This is the thoughts. And he wants to bring this out because he said this is what is going on in the person's head, and this is really the futility. And this is the sick evil that the person feels, that I leave naked and I go back with nothing. That very thought.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe perhaps it's because like him and also like his son, like he bases on the philosophy to his children, and he also like don't have anything.
Well, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say it passes on the philosophy to his children. You know, one thing I've learned over the years, I think, Rebbe Chait would say, and he says, let the words speak to you. Meaning when you're learning, you have to be very careful not to be, like you said earlier, a couple of weeks ago we talked about not being excited at your mouth to bring out a word quickly. So that he was referring to prayer, but that applies equally to when you learn. Don't be, to rush. A thought that comes to your mind, you didn't critique it. Don't just say it. You have an idea, good, but think it over. Now, does it fit the words? Is it something which is demanded by the verses, or you could possibly use a crowbar to fit it into the words? Meaning to say that it shouldn't be forced. Rebbe Chait would always say that. Don't force an explanation. It should be something which, like he says, should be demanded. What must you say? I don't know how many times he said that in the beginning of a class. And we would start the shiur and he'd discuss it over. And then right halfway through, he gave us the problems, we'd think about it, and he would tell us, what must you say? Meaning, what is demanded by the words? So that's why I like to look at the verses, let the verses talk to you. And to me, what's demanded by these verses is that when he talks about in 12 that there's an evil sickness or a sick evil under the sun, but then when he says the same exact words again in 15, and also this is a sick evil, all of a sudden you notice it doesn't say under the sun. So you have, the verses are demanding you to explain that omission. And also, like the word shomer, like Doug pointed out, in the, that was guarded in 12. There is a sick evil that I've seen under the sun. There is wealth that is guarded by the owners. Why does it just say that the owners have wealth? No, it's guarded. So what is it trying to, there's something there it's trying to tell you. When you guard something, this is your value. If you just have something, that doesn't tell you it's a real value. It means you have it. If you guard something, now it's telling you that you, who's guarded? Who's the one person in the kingdom that's guarded the most? The king. The one who could have the best effect of either good or bad for the kingdom. But you see how he ends. He says it's guarded for his evil. It's not just guarded, but the wealth is guarded to his evil. Because it's his undoing. It's a real, you think it's a value, you guard something as a value, just the opposite. Okay, so when he talks about giving over to the son, Naomi, he says that there's the wealth is lost suddenly, or an evil calamity. And then he has a son, and he has nothing to give him.
I was thinking because, people that are wealthy, they give to their children the impression that this is, the most important thing. And also, I don't know, I thought that there was, ambiguity when he says he comes into the world naked, and whether he's talking about him or the son, then you could say that they're talking about both of them. That's what I was thinking.
Right, it could be both. I mean, somebody mentioned that earlier. I'm not sure, but the flow of the verses would be, now once he talks about the son has nothing, and he has ma'uma is the last word in 13. So that word is again repeated, like Doug pointed out, in 14. So I would say it's smoother to say he's talking about the son. And as he comes from the womb, because he just talked about birth also. So birth and nothingness is what we refer to as the son in 13. So then when he continues in 14, it says, as he came from the stomach of his mother naked, he will return there. As he came, again with the word ma'uma, with nothing. So it seems to be smoother to say it's continuation. It's an elaboration. But it's about talking about the son. But it's a sentiment which is a futile sentiment. It's a sick value. Because to say it's a sad thing that you're going back without anything in your hand is foolish. It doesn't matter. Nobody takes anything. And you can go to the other commentaries too. They talk about he doesn't take any righteousness with him. Like Cal was mentioning before, he's not taking anything to perfect his eternal home. So all the wealth is not doing anything for him. So there's two understandings over there. It's the understanding of the foolish person that he laments that the child will be born naked and have nothing and go back to the grave and have nothing in his hand. So that's, he feels bad about that. So that's a foolish idea. Well, the true idea is that if a person puts all his time into money and then he ends up leaving the world and all the time he invested, he did not build up his soul. He didn't really focus on that. I was just reading the Duties of the Heart, and he talks about how a person should be planning that maybe today he could die. He's not morbid. He's realistic. He doesn't know when his day comes. So look at the reality. Don't let that be something which is a complete delusion. Everybody else dies except for me. A healthy person, and that's what we'll say in the Messianic age, people are not going to say, blessed is the true judge when people die, but they're going to say, blessed is the one who's good and does good. That's what they're going to say when people die, because people will clearly see death as a good in the future. It's not going to be something which is morbid or sad. They see that this is a great plan. But what the king wants to embellish on here, and that's what repeats it in 15, is that this foolish idea that people say they left with nothing. But he says, no, what benefit really is there? See, in 14, people have they lament. It's a bad thing that he doesn't carry anything in his hands. So that's talking about a value system where if you have something in your hands, it's a good, right? But that's still the person's false view. In 15, when a person has nothing, I mean, he says in 15 that he comes naked, he goes back with nothing. But now the king says what you should think about. What benefit was there to him that he labored for nothing? Now, how do you understand that? What benefit is there that he labored for nothing? There's two ways to understand it. You tell me. Let me just see, Tina and Avner. I'm not getting the gist of what you wrote on screen. I'm sorry it's too long to get back to you, but if you want to elaborate, unless you know it was answered, but if you could elaborate right on screen what the questions were. But with the question we have right now, then that to you know, we'll take this up to the last point is that what does he mean when he says, and what benefit is there to him that he labored for the wind, that he labored and all he's got is like emptiness. The wind means emptiness. So this could mean, in terms of this, the sick value system, that the person feels bad. Well, what benefit is that to him? He didn't make anything. Or if you look at it as the true way that this verse is being written, that the king is telling you, what's the sickness? The sickness now, since he's critiquing the thought, he's saying, what value is it to the person that he worked for nothing? Because all the work for the money, whatever, even that attitude, whether it generates money or not, the attitude is something which is really not benefiting the person's soul, which is really the eternal part of the person. So when he says, what benefit is there that he labors for wind? Meaning, the wind is the uselessness of money once you die. Is that your system? Forget it. That's not something which has any value to your soul. And that, I believe, was what Ibn Ezra says. He says, and this is a sick evil, he says, "Hu l'chol ba'olam." This is true for all people who enter the world. Because naked they come and naked they go, all of them. And therefore, what benefit is there that they labor to win? It's Ibn Ezra seems to be saying the verse verbatim. Where's his commentary? But you see, he's talking about the person. He disagrees. Rashi, like Doug, you mentioned before that Rashi's talking about money. Money comes and money goes. You see, Ibn Ezra says clearly it's the person. And he says that it's talking about the person that comes and he goes. And therefore, what benefit is there for all the labor? Meaning to say that he's trying to make the person question the fact that I don't care how much you go after the money. Whether you die, whether you don't die with it, it's not going with you. You make a lot of money, what is it? You go back to the grave naked. So he's telling you that the ultimate value of something is really, like we said, is what benefits the person eternally in terms of the soul. But I think we could also say one more thing. And that is, again, addressing the apparent repetition between 14 and 15. But 14, we talk about coming naked and going back to the grave naked. But there it says he doesn't carry anything with him. That's an opinion as if you want to carry something with you. That's a false view. A person wants to have something tangible in his hands because of labor. But that's a false view. But that's not what King Solomon says. King Solomon doesn't say what does he carry with him. He says what benefit is to the person. That's a whole different story than saying, you know, what does the person carry with him. It's a very slight difference, but it's the world's apart. One's talking about this world and one's talking about the next world. In 14, where people have this lamentation and they say, a person comes in naked and leaves naked and he doesn't get to carry anything with him. It's talking about the need, the expression of the person to want to have something tangible. Look what I did. That's the wrong view. And then he goes and explains that the real way to look at it in 15 is that what benefit Carrying something in your hand is just your own emotionally impulsive desire. You want to have wealth. The King Solomon says, no, that's the wrong way to look at it. The way you should look at it is what benefit is there to you if you go after that. All right? Is it clear to everybody? Maybe that helps. Just comparing those difference of words. Are you looking to carry something? That's a false type of view. You want some tangible thing to take with you. Or do you look at it properly? And you don't look at what you're carrying, but you look at benefit. Benefit is not a physical thing. Carrying has to be physical. It's referring clearly to a physical act. So carrying is a wrong idea. If a person wants to carry something away from this world to the grave, he can't. Although people want to. But you talk about benefit. What benefit is that to you that you came naked and you're leaving naked? And now when he says what benefit is to you there, he's telling you the right philosophy. It sounds like it's a lamentation. It sounds like he's repeating over the words of the foolish person. I came naked, I'm going naked, and you know, what benefit was to me? It's like, you know, I did all this work and I've got nothing in my hands. No, he's not saying that. He's saying you came naked, you leave naked, so therefore abandon the view. You're trying to take something with you because it will not benefit you. That's what he says in 15. What benefit will it do to you if you go down this path of looking to hoard wealth? All right, is it clear already?
We're good.
Okay. All right, so let's wrap it up here. And we'll pick up, let's see. We've got now, I think it goes on a little more on this. So we're up to 16. And we'll see what angles it takes there. All right, so pick up next Sunday with verse 16, all right?
That sounds good, Rabbi. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Okay.
Have a good week, everybody.
Okay, good week to everybody.
Okay. Take care.